Do you believe in God? Or do you know someone who says that, no, I don't believe in God? There's an increasing number of people in our society that obviously was once a Christian country who make that kind of declaration. But if we ask them, well, tell me about the God that you don't believe in. Often it will be, a God, well, he lives kind of somewhere up there in the clouds in heaven. He looks down on us down here below and he's kind of, a bit negative, critical, heavy-handed, really judgmental about what's going on. It's the kind of God that occasionally might intervene in the world to perform a miracle here or there. A God who in the end will condemn those who have done bad things to hell, and those who have done good things he will invite to spend eternity with him in heaven. Now, if that's the God that you don't believe in, I'm with you, because that's not the Christian God. That's not the God that we worship here as Catholics united in the Eucharist. The God that I worship, the God that I believe in, is the God of Jesus Christ, the God who revealed himself in the midst of a very human situation, in the context of a particular people in a particular time. The way that the Jewish people understood that word God was so far removed from what essentially is, in contemporary understanding, deism, or it's a deist understanding. Sometimes it's called the watchmaker God, the God who sets all things in motion and then just steps back and lets it all unfold with almost no intervention. The problem with that God is he's pretty useless. What's the point of worshipping a God who, by definition, is somewhere outside of the whole of our normal human existence? On the other hand, you get New Age kind of theories that will talk about God in terms of God being present in all things, that I'm quite happy I don't have to come to church because where I find God is out there somewhere in creation. When I see a beautiful sunrise or when I behold the beauty of a mountain scene, that's all the sense of God that I need. And so God is just there somewhere in the midst of nature. But neither position is what the Jews understood by that word God, and certainly not what Jesus understood by the word God. When the Jewish people wanted to talk about God, they always told their story. The story of how God had intervened in their lives. That God had rescued them from their time of being slaves in Egypt. He'd freed them. Then he called this people to be a particular people, a sign and a witness in the world of what God was meant to be about. And so he called this people into a covenant. He gave them the law, the Torah, to form and guide and shape their lives. It was a God who was present in their very midst. In the desert, he was present with the pillar of fire by night and a column of smoke by day. This very presence of God, called the Shekinah, this glorious, wonderful, royal presence. Sometimes they had the sense of God as spirit, the spirit who hovered over the waters of creation, over the tohu bavohu. Sometimes they understood God in very feminine ways. For example, the wisdom of God was a very feminine concept. It was the beauty of God shaping and forming, particularly humanity. These five different concepts are very dynamic. It's not the static kind of sense of a God somewhere else. They knew that God wasn't in creation, but that God could be experienced in creation, that God could be experienced in all of the things that they saw and touched and tasted, all of the parts and elements of life. God was present in those, but not alone in those. God was also absolutely sovereign. God was the one who was absolutely holy, worthy to be worshipped, the kind of God that you wanted to give your whole life and soul to, because God was worthy of that worship. And so in Judaism, there is this wonderful dynamism, this dance, if you like, between the toing and froing, the whole sense of a God who is found in creation and covenant, in redemption and in call, in the Exodus and in the return, in the exile and in the promise of being restored to the promised land, to the land that God had originally called his people to. And this sense of the dynamism, this wonderful creativity that is present in Judaism, that's the way that the early church understood this person called Jesus. That when they first met him and encountered him there in the stable in Bethlehem, there was very little to behold, very little to mark that child out to be different. It was only in the light of the cross that the church began to understand and to realize that it was at that moment, at the moment of the crucifixion, the moment when Jesus stretched wide his arms to embrace all of humanity, that they understood that it's in the face of Jesus on the cross that they begin to truly see the face of God. And in the midst of that, monotheism, the Jews understood, finally reaches its true perfection and its true fulfillment, because it's a monotheism that is able to be shared, a monotheism that opens itself to us in the worship of God, a monotheism that is not static, is not boring, is not contained, but a monotheism that is creative and absolutely dynamic in the way that God extends and offers to us this possibility of being in relationship with our God. So God isn't just somewhere else, somewhere locked away in another realm, another possibility, who sometimes intervenes in the world in this sense of miracle. That idea of miracle was really foreign to the Jewish understanding, because it presumes that God is absent. Well, they said, no, God is there. He feeds the ravens. He takes care of all of us. He's always there, part of our lives and our breathing, and all of that is present in the very midst of who we are. The truth and the gift of Christmas is the truth that the God that we worship is not static, is not locked in history, is not somewhere else, but the God who invites us into his very life, his very presence here and now. I heard during the week that the whole, in a sense, of the Christian mystery can be summed up by 8 simple notes that are played on a piano. Now, you might have practiced the scales at some point in your childhood, so I'll get Alona to just demonstrate an 8-note scale for us. And you say, well, how does that kind of give me any insight whatsoever into salvation history? How does that open at all the way of God? Maybe we're doing it the wrong way. Maybe we need to start and go backwards. Maybe that's the key. I think that's opening up something. Maybe if we do it again, Alona. It's amazing how simple so many of the Christmas carols are, but this gift, this truth that we have indeed received joy, that God has opened this joy to us because God has come in the child in the manger, that Jesus reveals the very presence of God. And so indeed, this night is joyful. Indeed, this night is wonderful because God has come.